Mr. Struthers was a conscientious general manager and naturally inclined to be a bit talkative. The combination, therefore, resulted in a tour that was fully explained, perhaps even overabundantly explained, at every step. However, Mrs. Weston was not bored. Indeed, she stopped him several times and begged him to repeat his statements in simpler language so that Gloria might understand. Under the influence of this appreciation of his narrative powers, Mr. Struthers expanded genially and became ever more communicative, if possible. George Weston himself showed a gathering impatience. "Pardon me, Struthers," he said, breaking into the middle of a lecture on the photoelectric cell. "Haven't you a section of the factory where only robot labor is employed?"
"Eh? Oh, yes. Yes, indeed."
He smiled at Mrs. Weston.
"A vicious circle, in a way. Robots creating more robots. Of course, we are not making a general practice out of it. For one thing, the unions would never let us. But we can turn out a very few robots using robot labor exclusively, merely as a sort of scientific experiment. You see," he tapped his pince-nez into one palm argumentatively, "what the labor unions don't realize, and I say this as a man who has always been very sympathetic with the labor movement in general, is that the advent of the robot, while involving some dislocation to begin with, will inevitably—"
"Yes, Struthers," said Weston, "but about that section of the factory you speak of, may we see it? It would be very interesting, I'm sure."
"Yes. Yes, of course."
Mr. Struthers replaced his pince-nez in one convulsive movement and gave vent to a soft cough of discomfiture.
"Follow me, please."
He was comparatively quiet while leading the three through a long corridor and down a flight of stairs. Then, when they had entered a large, well-lit room that buzzed with metallic activity, the sluices opened and the flood of explanation poured forth again.
"There you are," he said with pride in his voice. "Robots only. Five men act as overseers, and they don't even stay in this room. In 5 years, that is, since we began this project, not a single accident has occurred. Of course, the robots here assembled are comparatively simple, but—"
The general manager's voice had long died to a rather soothing murmur in Gloria's ears. The whole trip seemed rather dull and pointless to her, though there were many robots in sight. None were even remotely like Robbie, though, and she surveyed them with open contempt. In this room there weren't any people at all, she noticed. Then her eyes fell upon 6 or 7 robots busily engaged at a round table halfway across the room. They widened in incredulous surprise. It was a big room. She couldn't see for sure, but one of the robots looked like
it was Robbie!
Her shriek pierced the air, and one of the robots about the table faltered and dropped the tool he was holding. Gloria went almost mad with joy. Squeezing through the railing before either parent could stop her, she dropped lightly to the floor a few feet below and ran toward her Robbie, arms waving and hair flying. And the three horrified adults, as they stood frozen in their tracks, saw what the excited little girl did not see. A huge, lumbering tractor bearing blindly down upon its appointed track. It took split seconds for Weston to come to his senses, and those split seconds meant everything, for Gloria could not be overtaken. Although Weston vaulted the railing in a wild attempt, it was obviously hopeless. Mr. Struthers signaled wildly to the overseers to stop the tractor, but the overseers were only human, and it took time to act. It was only Robbie that acted immediately and with precision. With metal legs eating up the space between himself and his little mistress, he charged down from the opposite direction. Everything then happened at once. With one sweep of an arm, Robbie snatched up Gloria, slackening his speed not one iota, and consequently knocking every breath of air out of her. Weston, not quite comprehending all that was happening, felt, rather than saw, Robbie brush past him and came to a sudden, bewildered halt. The tractor intersected Gloria's path half a second after Robbie had, rolled on 10 feet further, and came to a grinding, long, drawn-out stop. Gloria regained her breath, submitted to a series of passionate hugs on the part of both her parents, and turned eagerly toward Robbie. As far as she was concerned, nothing had happened except that she had found her friend. But Mrs. Weston's expression had changed from one of relief to one of dark suspicion. She turned to her husband and, despite her disheveled and undignified appearance, managed to look quite formidable. "You engineered this, didn't you?" George Weston swabbed at a hot forehead with his handkerchief. His hand was unsteady, and his lips could curve only into a tremulous and exceedingly weak smile. Mrs. Weston pursued the thought. Robbie wasn't designed for engineering or construction work. He couldn't be of any use to them. You had him placed there deliberately so that Gloria would find him. You know you did.
"Well, I did," said Weston.
"But Grace, how was I to know the reunion would be so violent? And Robbie has saved her life. You'll have to admit that. You can't send him away again." Grace Weston considered. She turned toward Gloria and Robbie and watched them abstractedly for a moment. Gloria had a grip about the robot's neck that would have asphyxiated any creature but one of metal, and was prattling nonsense in half-hysterical frenzy. Robbie's chrome-steel arms, capable of bending a bar of steel 2 inches in diameter into a pretzel, wound about the little girl gently and lovingly, and his eyes glowed a deep, deep red. "Well," said Mrs. Weston at last, "I guess he can stay with us until he rusts."